What happens if you were in a dark alley late at night and you meet a gang of philosophers? They make you an offer you can't understand. Okay, moving on. Moving on. I have a picture I wanted to show you, Alex. Some of you may have seen the picture before. During the Second World War in 1940s, Hitler's Air Force hurled bombs at Britain in what they called Blitzkrieg, lightning war, and the skies over the city of Coventry were terrible with planes, and the darkness of a November night came a devastating attack. And during that attack, the beautiful ancient cathedral of Coventry was bombed. A great church that was at the heart of the city, a symbol of Christian faith, and a symbol of the British ability to build great and beautiful things. There may have been other things attached to that. On the morning of November the 15th, a group of people stood in the ruins amid the dust and dry bones of Christian hope. A Christian church destroyed by planes from another Christian nation. The dry bones of a people's dreams of safety. And these people prayed in the midst of the bones and mourned the nearly 600 people who had died the night before. And the people and the politicians and the priests stood in the rubble and they asked, can these bones live? There were those in Coventry who said no. If it can't be exactly the way it was before, then it's just not worth it. The dream is over. Our time is gone, and God has abandoned us. Now, in the story that has come to be told, the naysayers' voices are kind of lost, but they were there. Ezekiel had a dream. The Spirit of God swept him up and set him down in a valley of bones, many bones, and they were very dry. This was the valley of death, a memory of imagined greatness, the bones of a life that was long gone or that perhaps never really was. The bones of what had been lost to Babylon, lost to the building of an empire, and the casual deaths of those who had been loved. It was a valley where myths have died, where dreams have dried and turned to dusty bones. And in that valley, there is nothing new. Now, there are a couple of things that might help you with this story. The prophet Ezekiel wrote down his ideas mostly in poetry. After the armies of Babylon had destroyed Jerusalem and torn down the great temple of Solomon in the holy city, they took away all the educated Jews so they could work in Babylon. And the people who once had been powerful in their own land had no power. Those who had been rich were poor. The priests had no temple to serve. They had believed they were invincible, that the royal house of David and Solomon would rule forever, despite what the prophets had been telling them. And they had believed that they would go on forever, becoming bigger, more important, more rich, more powerful. But now that myth was destroyed and they lived in despair. If it was not their destiny to be the most important, the most powerful, the most rich, were they still the chosen of God? Was God still there for them? And who were they if they were not the chosen ones? So that's the first part of that. The second thing that might help is to understand the words prophecy and prophesy. The word prophesy is a verb. It means to tell the truth. It means to tell the words of God, and it means to tell truth to power. In the Old Testament, a prophecy was not really a prediction of the future, though it might include that. It meant a great and powerful truth. And it is often a truth that those in power really, really, really do not want to hear. Or it is a truth that the people really don't want to hear. Ezekiel had been prophesying for some time, and he'd been thrown into pits, and people had tried to stone him. The life of a prophet is not easy. In the weeks after Easter, I am going to go away. I'm going to go to Belfast, among other places, in Ireland. In many ways, Belfast is also a city of dreams lost and dreams destroyed, where violence has been waged between Christians for so long it's hard to find hope, and the city is rife with the ghosts of lost dreams and lost loves. And so the conference I'm going to is called Holy Ghosts. And the major organizer and speaker is a man called Peter Rollins. And Peter, it does tie into the joke a little bit, is a philosopher. And when I read his books, I feel like I'm being made an offer that I don't really understand. Peter is a Christian who grew out of the Protestant charismatic tradition, though he's not all that fond of any tradition. And he and some friends founded a group they call ICON. Peter lives part of his life in Belfast amidst the dry bones of past bombings and dry bones of ancient arguments and old injustices. And he lives half of the time in the U.S. amidst the fresh bones of bombings and the dying myths of American moral superiority. Peter and the group ICON believe that at the heart of Christianity are the stories of death and resurrection. The heart of Christianity is not about moralism, and perhaps still less about fundamentalism. It is not about cultural superiority. It is certainly not about buildings that can be destroyed in an instant. Christianity is not about Protestantism or denominations. And Christianity is not about the myth of safety in a world where safety is an illusion. They believe Christianity is about death and resurrection. And sometimes that's the death of myth, the death of false ideas, the death of pride. Sometimes it is the death of ideas that were once true. And sometimes it is about real, actual death that must be mourned and acknowledged, and about the great cry of loss and sorrow. And it is about resurrection, the possibility of a new life which we ourselves cannot imagine. And like so many prophets and leaders whose work led to the promised land, and yet who did not themselves live to see it, the Christian life is about working for the will of God, even when we ourselves may not be the ones who benefit. In this new church building, we sometimes forget that we are standing in the ruins of Christendom. The idea that Christians held for 1,000 years, that it was the destiny and right of Christians to hold power, to describe and prescribe the culture of the world. That myth is crumbling around us like the rotten beams of a bombed building. It's as if we stand in the midst of a once great cathedral and the roof is gone and only a few walls remain. And sometimes, even though it might topple on us, we cling to those. Peter and his group look out at the world, and what they see is not just the end of Christendom, but that people try desperately to hold on to tiny pieces of what they imagine is great power. A part of symbolic building, or in some people in some churches, a focus on a particular moral story, the myth of a nuclear family, has replaced all the stories of Christian love and resurrection. Or perhaps in modern liberal churches, where liberalism itself becomes the reason for being, not the story of impractical and likely impossible resurrection. And so Peter asks, what is dying so we can live? What is it that we love that might need to die so there can be resurrection? And when God calls the bones to life, are there times when the bones say, no? Ezekiel's people were lost and destroyed. And before we think this is all just a metaphor about these dry bones, the path of the Babylonian army was actually littered with dry bones. And the people of Ezekiel wrote to were the descendants of those who had watched an army descend, killing, burning, and destroying. The images of death were nearby. They weren't just a metaphor for them. And yet out of that came one of the greatest gifts that the world has ever known, for it was in Babylon that the Jews gathered their writings and their stories and wrote from memory and from scraps of rolls and letters, from family, from the ruins of Jerusalem, and they put together the first Bible, as we know it, the Old Testament, or what they call the Tanakh, the law, the prophets, and the writings. Far away in Richmond, British Columbia, we are all in this room together partly because of a group of Jews living in desperation, in exile, in Babylon 2,500 years ago. God's possibility for resurrection was not just and not only about that few thousand Jews in Babylon. They were the means of God's possibility, even in the midst of terror. The people of Coventry decided they would rebuild Coventry Cathedral. Alex, could we have the next picture? But that it would not ever be the same. Instead, they built a new modern cathedral next to the ruins of the old, and the bones of the ancient cathedral are still there. A wonder and a memory of both creativity and destruction. You and I live in a time when all bets are off. We do not have any idea of what the future will look like. And those of you who have lived long have seen changes you never dreamed. And those of you who have lived short lives so far face death, destruction, and despair, as all the generations have before you, because that's what life is. And that is what the world throws at us. The dreams we have as children or as youth crash headlong into the world and they sometimes shatter. And all too often, we try to ignore the reality of destruction. We either want so badly to remain positive we do not give ourselves time to grieve the loss or even really accept it, or we wallow in it and become fearful and angry. And in fear and anger are the foundation of the lies. Remember I said, prophecy is God's truth. And to prophesy is to try as hard as you can to tell the truth. Peter Rollins says that most of us know the truth of our lives, the truth of our communities, but sometimes we just really don't want to hear it. And there is nothing that makes people angrier than hearing the truth they don't want to hear. And if they already know it and they don't want to know it, they will become angry. We are angered by the truth we know, follow me here, that we don't want to know and don't even want to know that we know. And one of the truths that we know that we don't want to know and that we don't even want to know that we know is that death is a part of the process of resurrection. Usually something must die for something else to be born. The life of a couple, free and unencumbered, dies when a child is born. Our lives as parents, completely taken up by the focus on children, dies when those children grow and mature. Our lives as children whose responsibility is limited die as we take up new lives, new possibilities, and new responsibilities. The church must sometimes die for a new possibility to be born, and it's hard, and sometimes it's terrible. And yet the life everlasting, which Jesus spoke about so often, comes only through resurrection. So for just a few minutes, through this rest of this service, ask yourselves what it is you are mourning. Mourning is not wrong. What is it that you mourn? And then pray for the resurrection to come, not the one you might expect, not the one you wish for, but the resurrection that we could never create for ourselves, the one we can't even dream of, the one that God offers. Pray for that as we sing.